What's cracking, folks? Welcome back to the Quo Vadimus podcast. I'm Jared Dubin, joined in this episode by Blake Murphy of Raptors Republic. He also does work for The Score. He is a Toronto native and one of the best voices covering the Raptors out there. The big news last week in Raptorland was the four-year, $64 million extension signed by their center, Jonas Valanciunas. So Blake and I discussed that for a little while. Jonas's potential as an offensive centerpiece, what kind of improvements he needs to make on defense, and what sort of impact he can make as an overall player. We tried to find some good comps for him in the future. Let's get you to that conversation right now. Hey, man. What's up? How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. Thanks, and thanks for giving me the time here. Obviously, you're one of our Raptors guys that knows the team the best. You're up there in Toronto, and they signed Jonas Valanciunas to a pretty large extension yesterday. The dollar figure is big, but based on some other signings we've seen of big men out there, it seems like it's pretty good value. Do you agree?
I definitely agree, and I want to thank the team and Valanciunas for giving us something to talk about in late August, because it's been dry, man. It's been boring. I think it's a good value. Obviously, if you've watched in the last 3 years, the potential is pretty obvious. And while he's not a $16 million a year player right now, that deal looks pretty close to market value, if not below market value, in this current salary cap economy. So when things explode next summer and Jonas would have had more leverage and a ton of teams with a lot of cap space and the need to spend it, I think the Raptors did well here. It's obviously a little bit of a risk giving a guy a deal 1 year before they have to, but I think this has the potential to be a good value for them over the next four seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think that getting the deal 1 year early sort of helps them a little bit too. If you look at it over the course of 5 years, I guess it'll be, it's a four-year, $64 million extension. And then this season, I think he was making around like $6 or $7 million. I want to double check
that. No, he's at 4.7. His qualifying offer for next year would have been 6 and change.
Right, that's what it was. So it's over 5 years, it's like $68 or $69 million. I mean, Omer Asik got 5 years, $60 million.
Ennis Kanter's the one that, I mean, Raptors fans who are excited about it just keep looking at the Ennis Kanter one and like, man, if that's what he got as a restricted free agent with only two teams interested in him by the time he finally signed, Jonas next summer, when teams not only have cap space, but like teams are going to be struggling to hit the floor next summer, he would have got, I mean, assuming he continues on his development curve this year, you have to think he would have got a lot more than this. Like, his max next summer would have been 5-120.
From the Raptors, right. But from someone else, it would have been like 4 for 89, I think 90-ish. It comes out to.
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. But so you mentioned before his potential. I think that, you know, we've seen a lot of it offensively, but mostly as sort of a post-up option, which is something that's not necessarily in vogue in the NBA these days, and I think that also doesn't necessarily mesh with the moves the Raptors have made to their roster over the last couple of years. You know, they're a team that's sort of built around Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan attacking the basket, and when you have a guy stationed in the post on the block, that's not, you know, it clogs the lane for guys like that to attack the basket. And then, you know, they signed Damari Carroll this summer. That might mean they might want to go a little bit smaller more often. How do you see that skill set sort of meshing with the team that it looks like they're building? Or do you think they'll maybe change course and try to build around him a little bit more?
I don't know if they'll necessarily run the offense through him a little more, but I do think it's going to change. Lou Williams and Gravis Vasquez are gone, and they are very much the player type that you mentioned. And DeRozan and Lowry are still around, for sure. DeRozan can walk next summer, and he's going to command a huge salary. So I think when I think when they were looking at figures for Jonas, I think when you're constructing a roster, it's important to, I'm not sure the best way to word this, but there's no certainty DeRozan's going to be on this team a year from now. So to say, you know, we don't want to pay Jonas this much because he doesn't fit with, you know, our star offensive player right now, well, he could be gone, and if it's a positive EV deal and you see it that way, then, you know, you work around that. I think with Lou and Gravis gone and Damari added as an additional shooter and another option to go a little smaller, the offense should be spread out a little bit more. The teams talked a lot. Ujiri and Casey have talked a lot about playing a different style. They haven't said aesthetically pleasing, but that's what it'll be. It should be a lot less one-on-one play. And on top of that, it's not as if Jonas's presence in the post was really that detrimental. As much as when you're drawing it out and when you're looking at it, a post presence can impede a drive-oriented offense. The offense was really good last year, even with Jonas in there. So I'm not sure it's that big a concern. He's still a bit of a sloppy screen setter, and it's pretty obvious when he's going to slip the screens. But he's tough to stop as a dive man. He's great putting stuff back around the rim. And as you mentioned, the post offense, there are very few guys per synergy who scored like he did in the post. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure he was the most efficient post scorer in the league last year. Among high usage post guys.
120 post ups?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if you're looking at the offensive changes they're going to make, you know, they've got additional shooting this year. They've taken away two very ball-dominant guards. You could definitely see a scenario in which he gets the ball a little more and they use him a little differently. And even then, last year, it's not as if their offense struggled when he was out there.
Right. And, you know, two things, I guess, that are sort of connected and trending in his favor over the last, you know, he's been in the league for 3 years now. He's increased his usage each season, and he's turned the ball over less often as a percentage of his possessions with each season. But he still hasn't yet used, you know, if you divided up 100% of possessions between all five players on the floor, you'd get to 20. His career high in usage rate last year was 19.1%. Do you think that, you know, as he becomes a more heavy usage player, that, you know, he's going to, I mean, you would expect him to lose a little bit of his efficiency just because of that trade-off. But do you think he can even be a higher usage option? Is there any way to get him there? Because it hasn't happened so far.
Yeah, I think you can use him more and more creatively. The biggest thing he's got to improve on that end, right now he gets really bad tunnel vision, and as much as the turnover rate has gone down each season, so has the assist rate. So yep. Right now, a lot of what you see is when they throw the ball into him in the block, he makes a really quick decision whether he's going to shoot that or whether he's going to kick it back out. And once that decision's set in motion, he's not changing course. He doesn't have the ability once he turns to the basket to see open guys or to see the double team coming, and that's an area he still struggles. I wish we had the data for, you know, turnover percentage when a guy gets doubled, because I'd imagine his is sky high. And that's I don't know if that's necessarily skill development or if it's just experience and getting more and more touches and, you know, that basketball IQ coming along with age. He's still, he just turned 23. But I do think they can use him more. He's below 20% usage right now. I think you could nudge him into the, you know, 21% range this season comfortably and see what he can do with it. He's got to get better passing out of the post, though.
Yeah, I mean, just to your point about, you know, he usually either, excuse me, will either pass it back out right away or take the shot himself. He averaged 17.2 front court touches per game last season, and he shot 8.2 times a game. So, you know, 9 times a game, he touched the ball in the front court and passed. And that's like nothing.
Yeah, that's low.
You know, and obviously that means, you know, pretty much half the time he was touching the ball, he was going to shoot it. So that's not exactly a guy that seems to be an offensive focal point type. You know, you'd have to touch the ball a whole lot more than that and in a lot different areas. And that's something that I think he can work on too. You know, you mentioned that he's good as a dive man. I think he has like a touch on his jumper. He doesn't shoot it much, but you look at his numbers, you know, from, you know, 10 to 15 feet or so, you know, 43% as a rookie, 37%, 39%. You know, that's pretty good numbers in that mid-range area. If he starts popping out to the elbows on his screens or doing like that little half roll and putting it up, that could be something that can work well and also get him more touches, because it's a little bit harder to get the pass all the way to the rim than it is to get it to the free throw line.
Definitely, and he's also a terrific free throw shooter, so, you know, not only does that pretend perhaps better mid-range shooting, but when you get him on those short rolls like that, if he gets fouled, you know, he's not going to pass once he's on the move, and he might lose the handle sometimes, but he's going to be tough to stop. He's going to draw a ton of fouls in those situations. He's a terrific free throw shooter. So there are a lot of little ways like that that, you know, he's not going to be a 16, 17 touch a game guy. I don't think that's ever going to be the case, but I definitely think you can bump his usage up, you know, a little bit here, like a little bit more on the block, a little bit more as a dive man, a little bit more at the elbows. Yeah, it's on him to get better in the areas, especially passing. I don't think he'll ever be a passer on the move, but at least if he could pass out of the post. No, that's a great point about him stretching the floor a little more, though. He does it on the baseline, and I'd like to see him come out, you know, instead of going just east-west, to go north-south and pop out to the elbows a little bit more.
Yeah, I think another way, especially if and when they go small, you know, he had cuts made up. I'm looking at it now, 21% of his offense last season averaged 1.2 points per play, got fouled a fair amount on those two. If they go small and sort of spread the floor, they're going to have to be sending help defenders from uncomfortable places, and that will open up opportunities for him to sort of duck in along the baseline and get easy touches close to the basket, which will both help him finish better and get him to the free throw line, where, like you said, he's a really good free throw shooter.
Yeah, and again, not to harp the point, but some of that comes down to him being able to pass better out of those double teams too, so that teams, you know, if he gets the double and it comes from an uncomfortable place, that's awesome. But if he's just going to turn the ball over and, you know, if the Raptors end up with someone sitting wide open in the corner and he can't find them, then, you know, teams will maybe accept that uncomfortable double to avoid, you know, knowing they can avoid him kicking it out for an open three.
Now, so the Raptors, they let Amir Johnson walk as part of their offseason, obviously. You know, some guys had to leave when they were going to bring in Damari Carroll. Amir was one of them. He was probably the best screen setter on the team over the last few years, and because of that was a very nice pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop option for Lowry, for Lou Williams, for Gribas Vasquez. Patrick Patterson is more of a guy who, when he sets a screen, he's almost always going to flare out to the arc. Do you know, I mean, you're close up there, is that screen setting something Jonas has improved upon since he's been in the league, do you think? Do you think it's something that he can get a whole lot better at? Or, I mean, you mentioned it before, it's not necessarily a strong suit. You know, what are the things that he can do to make that a better part of his game? Because obviously it's a big key for Lowry to help him get into the paint.
Yeah, it's big. He's sloppy in that regard. It's improved a little bit year to year, like a lot of aspects of his game have, but it's still, he telegraphs when he's going to slip a screen to pop, when he's going to dive, and, you know, you can tell watching him from his body language and the way he positions for a pick, you know, what he's doing on that pick. He's not a guy who can make those savvy, like, flip the direction of the screen at the last second. He's not good in that regard, and I'm not really sure how a guy works on that in the off season. I'd hope it's something that he's working on. It's not something I imagine he spent a lot of time with when he's playing with the Lithuanian national team, because I know they use him as a big, big piece of their offense, just dumping it into him. So it's probably not something that's been foremost on his mind, but it's definitely that's it's definitely the biggest thing that Amir Johnson leaving has created. And like Luis Scola can do a little bit of that, but I don't think they're going to want Scola and Valanciunas on the floor together at all. So you're right that it's really going to fall on Valanciunas. I have no idea if he's going to be able to get better at it, though. They've been small incremental improvements, but it's terribly obvious still what he's doing with the picks when he sets them.
Yeah, I think that something people need to remember about him, and I'm guilty of this too, when I do a lot of, not necessarily criticizing of him, but sort of backlash to backlash sort of thing, because Raptors fans were so high on him before he ever came over, after the whole Tristan Thompson over Jonas Valanciunas thing with the Cavaliers. He's only 23, and he's not been a guy who has played, like you said, that style of offense in Lithuania with the national team or before he came over. So it's still something that, you know, he's only 3 years into doing it. There's so much time for him to learn. You know, big guys, you know, they hit their prime 2-3 years from now for him. So it's definitely a situation where he's not nearly a finished product as a player yet. And I think that people need to recognize that and not necessarily have more patience, but just give a little time and see what happens.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's not safe to assume everyone is going to follow the development curve the same, but yeah, 23 is still incredibly young for a big man, and like the fact that he can even be above average offensive efficiency with close to an average usage rate, you know, at 23 and play 25, 30 minutes a game is encouraging. And like, you don't want to pay for potential, but the way the market was set up for next year, you had to, you didn't have a choice. So I'm optimistic that he's going to get better. There are so many things he's already good at and just needs to get a little bit better at. The far bigger impact is going to come on the defensive end. And I don't want to seg for you. I imagine you were transitioning that way sometime soon. But offensively, I think there are pretty clear signs that he's a quality offensive piece, even if, you know, even if the Raptors don't want to run an incredibly post-oriented offense, and even if the league's kind of moving away from that, I think a lot of the dollar value of this deal is going to come on the defensive side. Sorry, not the dollar value, but whether or not it's a good deal will come on the defensive end.
Yeah, we definitely were going to transition to defense in a second, but I do want to touch on, just because you brought it up, the minutes.
Sure.
He went from 24 a game to 28 a game from his rookie to his second season, and then I think, you know, most people, myself included, thought that they were going to have him play, you know, somewhere between 30, 35 minutes a game last season, just because of how much they need him to develop into an important piece for them, for their future to be as bright as they wanted it to be. But instead he played two fewer minutes a game last year than he did the year before. I would assume that you think and that they want him to play, obviously, you know, 8 to 10 minutes a game more than that. What do you think happened last year that it didn't happen right away? Is it the defense, or was it something else?
Yeah. So I think, obviously, yes, they would have liked to play him more than 28 minutes and you know, push those minutes higher this year so that you can grow comfortable into him eventually being a 34, 35 minute a game guy, maybe. I think part of it is the issue with the fact that the Raptors succeeded ahead of where they thought they were going to succeed. So they were kind of in this limbo last year where it wasn't, you know, when Ujiri took over, last year wasn't supposed to be, I don't think, a year where they were competing. So they ended up in this weird spot where, yes, they're competing, but there was also Terrence Ross that they needed to try to develop. And while they're failing in that regard, they also needed to try with Jonas Valanciunas. But come crunch time, you know, those wins were very important to them, whereas another, you know, a team a little earlier on their development curve would have been able to accept the lumps of, you know, throwing Jonas out there late in games. I think the most telling stat with his minutes is that he averaged 5.1 minutes in the fourth quarter, which is criminally low. It was his lowest quarter by far. But again, Dwayne Casey has openly admitted, and Jonas Valanciunas has openly admitted that all came from the defensive end. The offense wasn't a problem when he's out there, but they got roasted when he was on the floor defensively relative to when he wasn't. And some of his quotes in the presser yesterday were him taking accountability for that and knowing he needs to improve to get those fourth quarter minutes. They've got to hope it comes, because it's not about developing him anymore. They're paying him the money, where if he's sitting on the bench in the fourth quarter, it's going to look pretty silly.
Right. I mean, a guy that gets paid that much and is that young and that, like, frankly, is that good and has that much potential to be so much better, shouldn't be playing, like, just over half of the team's minutes. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, the team did get outscored per possession with him on the court last season, which for a team that was as good as they are is really not a good sign. But I'm not sure how you rectify that without putting him on the court and in position to make the improvements that he needs to make. And obviously, you know, speaking of that, the big thing that needs to change, or not necessarily change so much as improve, is the defense. You know, he's been consistently below average. I think it's clear to say that as a defender. He has been a pretty good rim protector, though, which is something that usually when you say a big guy is not a good defender, it's, you know, he doesn't protect the rim and guys can score there pretty easily. But, for example, I'm looking at, you know, Seth Partnow's point save per 36 minutes metric at Nylon Calculus, and Jonas was
12th.
10th in point save per 36.
Okay. Yeah, 12th per game. Sorry, I had the same thing open.
Right, which is terrific. The things that stick out are more, not necessarily numbers-based, except in terms of, you know, the points per possession they allowed when he was on the court. But it's things like he doesn't really corral ball handlers on the pick and roll that well. He's slower than he should be for a guy who has such good feet on offense when he's rotating. I didn't get to talk to the Raptors about it for the story that I worked on communication last year, but it doesn't look like on screen he's doing an especially good job of putting his teammates in good positions to defend with communication from the back line. Is that something that you see too? What are the biggest issues you think with him on that end that he needs to rectify?
Yeah, to the communication point, they're going to miss Amir a lot in that regard. Along with the screen setting, that's another one of those kind of, it's not going to show up in numbers, but Amir was the defensive quarterback a lot of the time, and I think Jonas having him helped a lot, and it's, you know, the training wheels are going to be off this year. He is a good rim protector. I think the opponent shot 46.5% when he was within 5 feet of the rim last year, which is, you know, it's 1 year is probably a small sample for those kind of numbers, but it's solidly above average. He seems to have learned the, you know, to use the phrase, the principle of verticality fairly well, and he's fouling a lot less when he goes up to contest at the rim. But yeah, his lateral, his movement laterally on defense doesn't jibe with his actual lateral quickness. The biggest thing, I think, he's not fast, you know, moving backwards towards the hoop when a guy's coming straight at him. But the bigger issue for me is when he's going east-west, and he's asked to move from one side from one block to another, or one side of the paint to the other, he can get lost really easy. It's not difficult to put him in the blender with ball movement. And what happens a lot of the time is when a guy's coming from the baseline, he's so susceptible to those little drop-offs where he'll step away from his man to try to protect the rim, and then the ball will just get dropped off to the guy he was originally guarding. A lot of that is basketball IQ, and I don't know what the remedy is beyond hoping he just gets better with age and experience. But not to make excuses for him, Dwayne Casey's system hasn't done Valanciunas any favors. It's a very aggressive system at the point of attack, And with how many poor perimeter defenders the Raptors had last year, Valanciunas was probably asked to do a lot more than, you know, someone with his experience and his defensive skill set would be asked to do. Adding Damari Carroll and Corey Joseph, and if they get to play DeLon Wright and Norm Powell, you know, the team's perimeter defender, the perimeter defense should be better. And the team has also talked, Dwayne Casey hasn't talked about it, but Masai Ujiri has mentioned tweaking the system, and I think that'll include getting a little bit more conservative with their heavy switching, and I would think the goal from that would be to ask Valanciunas to do a little bit less as the last line of defense, a little bit less moving east-west, and, you know, focus on more, have a more narrow focus of his defensive role. Hopefully the improved perimeter defense and making the system more conservative will let him do that, let him focus on the rim protection, and we'll get a better look if he's actually good at that. But there's a lot to see. I think their defense is going to be really different this year.
Yeah, the one thing I was going to bring up is, you know, because he's so big, you know, he's 7 feet, he has really long arms, and he's such a mobile guy in terms of his footwork on offense. It does seem like he should be a guy that's able to jump out and corral ball handlers up high, keep them out of the paint altogether. But I think we've seen over the last few years that hasn't necessarily worked all that well. You know, might it be more advantageous for them to have him hang back, you know, Roy Hibbert or Joakim Noah style, and just try to keep defenders, keep ball handlers near the elbow and not give them quite as much of a running start toward the basket ahead of him as they would if he comes out much further. That just gives smaller, quicker guys even more space with which to separate before they get to the rim, rather than if he's staying back near the free throw line, he's only got to take 2 steps to meet a guy at the basket, and it's much more difficult for them to beat him there with room to spare. Do you think that's something that they might try a little bit more, especially now that they have better defenders at the point of attack?
Yeah, I agree completely, and I think that's probably part of what they were hinting at in terms of getting a little bit more conservative. Some of it will depend on, you know, Kyle Lowry in 2013-14 was terrific defensively, and he was not last year. So, you know, if he's the guy that's out there with Valanciunas, you have to consider that a little bit too, and Lowry's a bit of a gambler. But yeah, I would think that that's going to be a point of emphasis in training camp and in the preseason, and they'll toy with that a lot. Because I think, you know, again, we talked about how he's only 23 and there's still room to develop, but I think he's shown pretty well now that he's not going to be effective as that kind of trap and recover big man. He just, for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, his reads or translating the offensive footwork to the other end, it's not something that he's shown he can do, and he's shown he can't do it consistently for 3 years now, and now the investment's in him. So, you know, when he's a young guy, you don't look at it and say, well, you need to tailor the defense around this rookie. But now they've invested heavily in him, and, you know, with better defenders all around the court, I don't think it's a bad idea at all to recognize what he is and isn't on defense and make changes like that.
It's not just that either. It's also, you know, their best big man defender is gone now too. So he's going to be the guy that's counted on in the front court to provide defense. You know, it's not coming from Luis Scola. And
it's not, yeah, you can't have Biombo out on the court.
Right. I mean, you can have Biombo on the court, but playing him with Jonas is probably not the greatest idea in the world. Even getting Jonas to league average defense would be a huge step for them just this year in particular. Do you think that there ever comes a point when he's a clear positive on that end? Or do you think it's, you know, based on the things you've seen so far and how slowly he appears to react and to move towards ball handlers, do you think that average is sort of the best you can hope for on that end, and then his offense sort of makes up for that because it'll be so valuable and that justifies the contract on its own? Or do you think that there's sort of untapped resource there that can turn him into a clear plus?
I don't know about a clear plus. I think you can hope for a little better than average. I think if you had told me at the end of last season, hey, this same team's going to be back and we're going to run the same system, even in that case, I would have been like, okay, I can talk myself into Valanciunas eventually, you know, smartening up enough to get to average on that end. You know, I don't know how we measure average, but it's mostly, you know, just looking at it. I think you can hope for a little bit better than average. I don't think he's ever going to be an elite defender by any means, because I think, you know, if he gets more intelligent, starts making these reads better and stuff like that, he's a guy that defensively, it concerns me a little bit if he loses quickness, because even though we've talked about he doesn't use that all that well, if you also threw slow on his profile, then, you know, it's tough to see him being a good defender at all. So I think he's got a couple year window here where he can improve and maybe nudge above average, but I don't think he's going to be like a top tier defensive big man at all.
What do you think then for, you know, a big man who tops out as, let's say, a slightly below, slightly above average defensive player? You know, what kind of offensive value do you have to provide from that position, and what kind of offensive value do you think you can provide to be, not necessarily to live up to the contract, because I think just based on where the cap is going, even if his offense just stays the same as last year, that probably justifies it, but to make it, like you said, a plus EV, or for him to be sort of the cornerstone guy that they appear to want him to be, what kind of, I don't want to say improvements, but what kind of, I don't know the word I'm looking for, but what does he have to be offensively if he's just going to top out as a slightly above average defender in order to be the cornerstone piece that it looks like they want him to be?
It's a part of, it's almost a chicken or the egg thing, because he has to get better enough defensively that they can keep him on the floor for offense for larger chunks of the game. There's no chance of him justifying this contract at 26 minutes a game. You can't give $16 million to a guy who's not, you know, sniffing 30 minutes a game and is only playing 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. So the first step is to get passable defensively, and then we'll see what the offense can do. You know, that usage is a percentage, so if his minutes also go up and his usage goes up, you know, that's a lot more touches the game and a bigger share of the team's overall offense. And I think his current efficiency level, you know, is great offensively. It would be nice if he could get the minutes where he's a 16-10 guy instead of a 12-8 guy. And I think with the market, if he's average or slightly above average defensively, 16-10 on, you know, 56-57% shooting gets you $16 million. I think you take that deal. So yeah, I don't have a clean answer for you, but he's, like I kind of alluded to earlier, he's a guy right now that there's a lot of good and a lot of small ways he can get better, but it's tough to gauge, you know, how much improving in those small areas by small amounts is going to change his overall impact. I think it's a good gamble. I think it's a smart deal relative to the market. It's unfortunate there's not one thing I can point to and be like, yeah, that's where he's got to improve and this is how he does it, and then the contract will be a home run.
In terms of, you know, and I know you got to go soon, so we'll make this the last sort of quick discussion point. In terms of his overall impact on the game, is there a guy that you would compare him to in terms of what, you know, his future impact would look like on both sides? Because I do have a guy in mind that I think would make sort of a very easy and very good comp, and I think would easily lead to him justifying the contract if he turns out to be that same type of player.
Now I'm curious. Now I want to answer the question, but I also want to just, like, nail who you're thinking of. I think the comparison that a lot of Raptors fans use is Kanter, because, you know, Kanter is got the contract that he did and is an abhorrent defender and a higher usage but similarly effective offensive player. I think a more realistic goal might be kind of the production that Nikola Vukcevic puts up. Vukcevic is better defensively and he's a stronger rebounder and obviously works under a much heavier load, but if Valanciunas could sniff the kind of production on both ends that Vukcevic puts up, I think that's that's not a terrible comp in terms of overall player value, even if it's not a great fit stylistically.
Yeah, mine was something that fits both stylistically. The one difference is this guy had super heavy usage, but it's Brook Lopez. I think they're very similar in terms of the way that they play and you know, doing a lot of their damage out of the post, but are also they're good as role men. Brook has started adding sort of the pick and pop a little bit to his game. Obviously, he's a much higher usage player, but in the same style that Jonas is, where it's a lot of post ups. But I think that, you know, Brook made a little bit of a leap defensively, to the point where, you know, he used to be really bad on defense, and now he's, you know, more than passable. I think he's probably a slight positive. Obviously, he never really stays healthy all that much, but I think that's... If he can approximate that impact, not necessarily on the same usage that Brook carried, you know, where there was a season there that he averaged, like, close to a 30 usage, but if he can get into the 23, 24, 25 range... I think that he'll easily justify the contract and more.
Yeah, I like that comp a lot, actually. I hadn't thought of that one. Defensively, that's great. Like, a guy who, you know, to look at should have been okay defensively and wasn't, but was still a good rim protector and then kind of figured out how to be a defensive plus. I like that a lot.
I'm glad I have your approval.
I'm sure it means the world to you.
It absolutely does, man. So, listen, do you have anything that you want to plug?
No, not at all. Raptors Republic is where I do my Raptors stuff, the score for other NBA stuff. But, man, it's late August, man. I didn't come on to plug. I just, anything basketball to talk about right now.
Yeah, man. It's dark times for people trying to talk about the NBA all the time right now. It's late August is really the dog days. But we're going to wrap it up there. Check out everything else on the HP Basketball Network. Obviously, we've got all of our podcasts. We've got the season preview coming in about a month and a half or so. Blake, thanks for stopping by, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, man.